The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Fox News executive, another one, Bill Shine, has been fired. I got to get into that bit. Also, I guess at Northern Arizona University, it's okay to read any kind of history book, in class or even before class, unless it's the Bible. Mark Holden, 22-year-old history major, has been ordered to leave a lecture hall after his professor objected to him reading the Bible before the start of the class. Ay, ay, ay. Popular homeschooling resource quietly is promoting LGBT for children. We're now talking about growing babies in a bottle. I just like to start with this. We're going to survive. We are in a massive time of transition right now where everything is going to be turned upside down. The question is, how are you going to handle it? I want to start with how you shouldn't handle it with Stephen Colbert. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want you to listen to Stephen Colbert and CBS broadcast entity, what they broadcast last night about Donald Trump. Listen to this.
Walking out in the middle of a sentence wasn't even the president's biggest insult to John Dickerson.
And I think actually I've been very consistent. You know, it's very funny when the fake media goes out, you know, which we call the mainstream media, which sometimes I must say is you. But when the
you
fake
mean me personally or
your show, I love your show. I call it Deface the Nation.
Okay,
really?
Stop. Anybody think that's smart move on President Trump's?
No.
Anybody think that was a classy move?
No.
Anybody think that you want to defend President Trump on stuff like that?
No.
At least he said it to his face.
Yeah, right.
I'll give him that.
If you are going to get into a fight with a bully like that, what do? One of two things. You either punch back harder, and if the bully is known to throw haymakers, you're going to get into a fight until one of you can't get up. Okay? Only one's walking away from a fight like that. The other way to win in a fight like that is to kill him with kindness, not play that game. The American way is to not play that game. Now I want you to listen to Stephen Colbert.
Donald Trump, John Dickerson, is a fair-minded journalist and one of the most competent people who will ever walk into your office, and you treat him like that? Now, John Dickerson has way too much dignity to trade insults with the President of the United States to his face. But I, sir, am no John Dickerson.
Oh.
Here it comes.
Okay. That is the sound of the Republic dying.
Let me introduce you to something we call the Tiffany Way. When you insult one member of the CBS family, you insult us all. Bazinga. All right? Here we go.
All right. He's on one now.
Mr. Trump, your presidency, I love your presidency. I call it Disgrace the Nation.
That's funny because it's the same joke.
Similar. You're the glutton with the button. You're a regular Gorge Washington. You're the president.
Oh my gosh.
But you're turning into a real pricktator.
That's the Tiffany
you
way.
You attract that more steroids than free Rogaine. You have more people marching against you than cancer. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster. Your presidential library is going to be a kids' menu and a couple of Jugs magazine. The only thing smaller than your hands is your tax returns.
Oh.
And you can take that any way
okay.
you want. We got a great show for you tonight.
Wow. All right. Let me, he's got a great show for us tonight. All evidence to the contrary. But thanks.
Yeah, I mean, his tax returns, he hasn't released those yet.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, he's comparing that to like some body part.
Right, but his tax returns haven't been released. That's why it's funny to say that, because his tax returns haven't been released yet. And it's a good observation about his tax returns, because he hasn't released those. So when he brings that up, it's funny because he hasn't even released them. I don't know if you saw that in the news.
So the press.
So horrible.
The
so
press
bad.
Is. The press just doesn't understand what they're doing. They just don't have any clue as to what they're doing. When I went and started talking to members of the press and members of the opposite side, I said to them, please don't make the mistakes that I made. Now,
and how much do they yell and scream about respect for the president?
Oh, my.
Treating the president so badly.
Right. Jeez. That is, look, what their response will be is, this president is so much worse. How dare you even compare? It doesn't matter. He's the president of the United States. And beyond that, you are sounding like him. You have become just as despicable as him. When you say that, you know, look at the childlike behavior, look at the childlike behavior, except he's doing it professionally. And so that's the little line that you have in your head. Well, I'm a comedian. That's not comedy. That's third grade comedy. That you could feel viscerally, he felt that. Comedy stops becoming comedy when it's real. Now, every joke, I mean, the problem with comedy is every joke, somebody is on the losing end of it, always. But there's a difference between joking with people who you love, joking with people who you like, and then just telling a racist joke. When you're just out telling a racist joke because you hate them, fill in the blank, then it's no longer comedy. It's a statement. That's a statement. And he's being rewarded right now by ratings. But where does this end? The press doesn't understand. By feeding back into it, we're not the lying media. We're not the lying media. We're not the lying media. Shut up. Just prove it. Just live it. Show us that he's wrong. But even in their own correspondence dinner, they couldn't do that. Even in their own correspondence dinner, where they were the ones putting it on, and then they were the ones that reported on what they were doing. They didn't report on what Woodward and Bernstein really had said. What they reported on was that Woodward or Bernstein, I can't remember which, had made some point to the president about fake news, that it's not all fake news. But before that, they went on and on and on about the responsibility of the media. It's a two-way street. They didn't report on that. They didn't think that that part was important. What they thought was important was the slam on Donald Trump and the president. Zero self-reflection. It's not going to end well for the media. It's not going to end well for America. It's not going to end well for, this is separating, you know, here's what my mistake was. When I've said in the past, because I hurt half the country, they will look at that statement and say, yeah, see, he knows he was wrong and he was hurting by lying to all of those conservatives and whipping them up into a frenzy. No. I was so convinced that I was right and that you were wrong, that it didn't matter how you felt. That I was right. And if you disagreed with me and the millions of people that agreed with me, you were too stupid to get it.
Also, you remember how bad it was? I mean, we weren't saying anything like this about Obama. We were saying the guy's a Marxist. He's got Marxist tendencies.
Well, that was racist of us
social,
to say that.
And that was all racist, and that was all horrible, and that was disrespectful. Yeah. When we're just talking about his ideology, this is all personal stuff. These are all fourth grade insults. You're calling him names. I mean, they're doing everything they claim to be against.
So Samantha Bee, who is a friend of mine, Samantha Bee, she's doing an interview with Mother Jones, of all places. Could you go further left? And she is, they talk about the interview with me. You had, Mother Jones, you had an intriguing interview with Glenn Beck at Christmas time. I love the sweaters, about our political rift. Beck admitted that he had done damage by being so divisive. He said to you, please don't make the mistakes that I made. Do you think this is a time for people trying to come together or more of an oppositional moment? Samantha says, both. Listen, we're not in Kumbaya town here, but you need to be able to talk to people. You need to be able to agree from time to time if we're going to get anywhere. Once you've started a civil dialogue, it's a much smoother road to compromise. The key thing to remember is it's a daily practice and it's not easy. Glenn and I, in the strongest terms possible, disagree on a lot of things. When you can agree on one thing, you should have no expectation that suddenly a person is converted to your way of thinking. You have to be willing to be frustrated constantly. There are certain things that we can all agree on are terrible for America. Beck loves his country. I love this country. I chose this country. Blah, 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 blah. I have respect for the Constitution. Great. Samantha, you are making exactly the same mistake that I made. Exactly the same mistake. Stephen Colbert, you are both getting so wrapped up in your anger and hatred and vitriol for this president that you are forgetting that a third of this country, if not 50% of this country, still like the man, still agree with him. And every time you do a monologue like Stephen Colbert did, it makes it impossible for someone who is either in the center and said, look, I don't like either side, to rally around you, to rally for your side, because you're both acting like children. Our country is better than this. We're better than this. You know, Jimmy Fallon right now, hurting in the ratings. Good, Jimmy. Sit it out. Sit it out. We will come back to our senses at some point. But everyone who is making their name and their money on this right now, you're going to regret it. And that's on both sides. If you are the one leading the charge of hate the media, hate the left, I warn you, you are going to be remembered in ways you can't imagine today and would wish would go away in the future. You are going to be remembered as being on the wrong side. It's no secret how I feel about the president. But I know that there are a lot of people who are really actually hurting, who don't believe in the system anymore. They don't believe in the media because of things like this. You would have torn anyone apart. We couldn't make fun of Barack Obama and his ears. You could, God forbid you talk about the man's ears. God forbid you do an actual impersonation of Barack Obama. The excuse still today is, well, he didn't have a lot of habit. Are you kidding me? He was a god. because you disagree with him, you think it's fair game. But beyond that, because he acts like a four-year-old, it gives you permission to act like a four-year-old. Knock it off. Is there anyone who will be an adult in the room? Knock it off.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Man, I'm just looking up at the TV and there's a brawl on an airplane. I mean, good God.
It's never ending. It is never ending.
It's never ending. What do we do? You know, we're better than this.
Millions and millions of people fly every day.
I know.
And none of these things happen on 99.9% of the flights.
Everybody's got a phone.
Everyone's
now.
Got a phone.
So we see all the things that happen.
I know.
By the way, we are absolutely not better than this. You keep saying things like that. I don't know what evidence you have to support it, but we absolutely
the United States
are not
of America.
Better.
What I have is the United States of
well,
America.
Yeah, what we so have I. to back us up is November 8th, 2016. And the year
we have made mistakes in the past, and I'm not saying that particular thing. I mean with our behavior. We have made mistakes in the past. We, you know, I could have said that to you in 1840, 1850, 1860. But what evidence do you have the United States is good? We've enslaved people. Yes, but I also have the United States of America as a point on the map saying it's good, too.
Going back to your previous point, however, you know, while I don't agree with the points that, you know, Colbert is making or Samantha Bee is making,
right,
there has to be some level of empathy as an entertainer, and that, like, their job is to do comedy that pleases their audience, and that's what their audience wants.
Okay, there is. However, on Samantha Bee's case, I don't think it's visceral. That was visceral. With what Colbert did last night, there wasn't a joke to be seen within 100 miles. He meant every word. That was an angry screed, okay? That's not part of your job. An angry screed is not part of your job.
It's what his audience wants, that's for sure.
Well, that's not. You don't necessarily give what your audience wants. I'm sorry to say it, but you don't always give what your audience wants. If your audience is crying for the blood of the Christians, do you bring out the lions? No. You still have a governor on you. You still have a regulator on you. You are responsible for what you do. When it comes to Samantha Bee, I have not seen her in an angry way deliver what she just did or what he just did. I think her problem is there's no balance to it at all. So make fun of yourself. Make fun of your own side. Take on the truth, not just one agenda. Back in a minute with the latest on Fox News.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm so glad that you're here. I want to talk a little bit about Fox News. About 3 weeks ago, before they were getting set to fire Bill O'Reilly, I said, you need to wake up to what this means, because if you lose Bill, the next guy that will go will be Bill Shine, and then it will be Hannity. And you're about to lose the conservative voice.
Bill Shine down.
And Hannity's not happy. In fact, Hannity tweeted that if Bill Shine goes, it's the end of Fox News. I wrote to Bill O'Reilly this morning and said, Bill, what does this mean? And pretty much he confirmed what I had thought, and that is Bill Shine was the last of the institutional knowledge. He was the last of the guys who were in a position to do something about it, to hold the line as a conservative or right-leaning media source. And make no mistake, this is happening because of two things. Roger Ailes, I mean, I don't know firsthand, but I mean, I would not be surprised if all of those charges were true. You know, there's some guys that you meet and you're just kind of like, yeah. Would not be surprised if everything were true. I don't know because I wasn't in the room. I didn't see any of it firsthand. I have no idea. But wouldn't be surprised. So, bad behavior. Bad behavior that was paid for over and over again. And nothing ever happened. The reason why nothing ever happened is because there is a dark side, I think, of the genius of Roger Ailes. And there is a really bright side of Roger Ailes. And Roger Ailes is a genius. He can look at a problem. He can look at what's happening in the media and immediately turn it around. He knows how to speak to the American people. The genius of Fox was Roger Ailes. His protege, if you will, was Bill Shine, the only guy in the chain of command that was cut from the same cloth and was there and knew it from the beginning. It's happening because Roger Ailes, most likely, those things are true. But then also because of the games that were played at Fox. The gamesmanship was beyond your wildest imagination. The positioning that Roger would do, the positioning of one personality against another internally, the lies that were spread about everybody, they liked the tension between the shows. They wanted everyone to think that the other one was going to take their show. And so it created this crazy paranoia in the building. But, you know, Roger and some believe Walt Disney was like this. He believed that creatives worked best when they were paranoid and under stress. I don't agree with that at all.
That's so insane to
yeah,
think.
Yeah, it's
that,
insane.
Yeah.
Walt Disney felt that way. I think Roger Ailes felt that way. And so terrible they created this horrible thing when Roger was there. But Roger was the linchpin that held it together. Once Roger was out of that door, here come the Murdoch wolves. And the Murdoch wolves are piling in through that door. And the interesting thing to watch is the Sinclair Tribune deal. Sinclair, I'm getting into inside baseball, but this is important for you to know. Sinclair put a bid up for the Tribune stations. There are, I think, 39 TV stations nationwide that are up for sale, 39 or 41. They had a bid in. Murdoch has gotten with Blackstone and said, now this is Rupert Murdoch. I want to buy those stations. And so he's put in a deal. Now, whether or not it's a big enough bid to have Murdoch own those Tribune stations or not is the key. Murdoch is picking Paul Lynde to block. Because if Sinclair gets those TV stations, then they can cobble together kind of a WTBS superstation, I think they believe, and they can hire some of these people.
Sort of a makeshift network, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of what they're
Fox,
going for.
A local news Fox, mm-hmm. Okay? In all of these, they would probably have, I don't know, 50 or 60 stations nationwide. And then they would probably try to flip that onto cable as a superstation. And then they would go after Fox. The problem with Sinclair is, you know, they are heavy-handed in what they believe at corporate level, which is fine. But they're one of the stations or one of the groups that told their talent, you are not to say a negative word about Donald Trump. So they dictated everything. Stu is looking at me. That was Sinclair, wasn't it?
I don't know. I haven't heard that. So
yeah, okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have the wrong.
Okay.
Wrong. You know, we'll check into that. But I'm pretty sure Sinclair was one of those companies. Sinclair has also been one of the companies that we've never been able to get clearance on because of my faith, because I'm Mormon, and they're Christian, and they don't think those two mix, and so we've never been able to do that. And that's fine, and they're a private company, and whatever, that's cool. They may be able to buy those stations, and they may be able to cobble together and bring these people back together and recreate Fox News. But they may not be. If Rupert Murdoch gets those stations, then you're blocked. Fox News without Bill Shine is in real trouble. Who's next? Well, I have news for you. Once you take apart Fox News, then you start looking at who's the next big dog. Who's the next guy? Is it Ben Shapiro now that they can take all of their guns and point them? Is it me? Is it Mark Levin and Conservative Review? Who is it? None of us. If Fox can't stand the heat of the kitchen, we all better be strong and we all better hang together, or we will certainly hang separately.
I mean, the biggest issue, too, is there's no other options, right? I mean, like, what, you know, there's no other network you could subscribe to that would have a conservative opinion. There's no available get to any of
stuff. I will tell you this, that we are working on some things as well, because the conservative voice needs to be heard. I am hoping that the other conservatives will realize how much trouble the conservative movement is in, and we will start working together. Conservatives generally don't like to do that. It's like herding cats. But we need to start working together where we can. Some of us disagree on too many things, but on the little things, we got to let those go. And if we can work together, the other thing is, I haven't asked you to subscribe to The Blaze in a long, long time. I'm asking you, subscribe to The Blaze. This is a crucial moment for conservatives, and I don't think that people really understand yet how much trouble we're in. Do you hear about Jim DeMint? Do you see the thing I posted yesterday or last night from Mike Lee? Mike Lee wrote a letter to the Heritage Foundation saying, signed by, I don't know, 30 senators and congressmen, don't let go of Jim DeMint.
Good for him.
And if you lose Jim DeMint, it looks like the Mercers may be involved, and because they're a big funder of Breitbart, big funder of the Heritage Foundation, they look like they're the ones putting pressure on the Heritage Foundation to replace Jim DeMint with Steve Bannon. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
That's the rumor.
The DeMint being on the outs is apparently true. That's
yes.
That, but now who they're going to replace him with, we don't know. But
yeah, the Bannon thing was rumored, but I don't think he's leaving the White House.
But they definitely forced DeMint out, apparently.
Well, the reason why, and this is crazy, is they say that under Jim DeMint, they became too active. They've lost their power of the white paper. Nobody read the Heritage Foundation white papers. There was an era.
Yes.
We don't need another think tank. We need do tanks. We need the Tides Foundation. That's what has pushed all of this through. Do tanks, not think tanks. Somehow or another, the left has found a way to work together. And the right is making the same mistake. I think of Joe Lieberman all the time. The left made the mistake of saying we could get these Marxist socialist radicals and bring them in, and we'll sit Michael Moore next in the president's box next to Jimmy Carter, and we'll control him. No, I'm sorry, but Joe Lieberman, he was the last one who said there's no place for a person like me with just common sense, traditional values that is liberal. There's no place for me in the Democratic Party. They left. The Democrats cobbled together a coalition, and they brought in the worst elements, and those worst elements took control. What's happening now with the conservatives? The GOP thinks they can survive with the worst elements of the right, and they're eating the Heritage Foundation. They are eating the right. The GOP, I'm telling you, people like Rand Paul, people Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, the time is going to come where they're going to say, there's no place for me in this party.
Well, I mean, the story today from McKay Coppins on the background of what's going on at Heritage is fascinating because it goes back to the typical sort of Washington power plays we've been seeing for a million years. And they're describing somebody who has been trying to get DeMint out since he started. And he's playing both sides. He's going to the establishment people associated with Heritage and saying, this DeMint is too much like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. And then he's going to the Trump people. And then he's going to the other side and saying, the Trump side is the problem. And he's going to the, okay, I said that wrong. He's going to the establishment and saying the Trump side is the problem. And he's going to the Trump side and saying,
he's establishment.
He's establishment. And he's too much in that anti-Trump thing. It's amazing to see it because they're just trying to, you know, stir up the opposition to get him out at any cost.
Right. And the reason why I think they're going after the Heritage Foundation is because the Freedom Caucus survived. They first tried to take on the Freedom Caucus, and they couldn't. And they had the backing of the people like the Heritage Foundation. So we can't take out the Freedom Caucus. Let's take out the Heritage Foundation, and we'll revisit the Freedom Caucus. This is what's happening. Let's take out Fox News, and then we can revisit everybody else.
The one thing that I have not heard discussed enough, in my view, is that Jim DeMint started the recession. This is the man who came out and started the recession.
Yeah, right.
And
This is the man, if you remember right, 12 years ago, was the only guy in the Senate that we trusted. He was the only guy where we're like, where is anybody but Jim DeMint?
No, that's true. It happened a lot. And he was also the guy who multiple times introduced a constitutional amendment on term limits. This is one of the things that Trump promised in his first 100 days hasn't been able to get to yet. Hopefully it's coming. But I mean, that's the type of thing, screwing with people's power that Washington does not like.
So if you would tweet today your support for Jim DeMint, tweet and Facebook post, go to the Heritage Foundation, call them. But the best thing you can do is do a tweet storm of the Heritage Foundation of supporting of Jim DeMint. They have to know. If you've ever given to the Heritage Foundation, you need to call them and say, not another dime. Don't lose Jim DeMint.
I believe the board is meeting today, by the way.
Hurry. Hurry.
Glenn Beck program.
888-727 back.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck program.
Hello, America. We're so glad that you are. We're so glad that you're here. What else is going on in the news? We have Christina Hoff Sommers. She's from the American Enterprise Institute. She's coming on. She's going to be on in a few minutes. She is really great. She's going to talk a little bit about this craziness that is happening on campuses that, you know, you've probably raped before. You just didn't know you raped.
All men have raped thousands of women is essentially what we're told by the media.
Yeah, that you most likely have raped. If you're a man, you most likely have raped. And...
That's incredible.
And you can decide at any time that has been rape.
It's rape culture, Glenn.
Yeah.
Rape culture. And then we found recently a professor who wrote about how they teach about rape culture. And what they find as they teach about rape culture is that a lot of women realize in the class that they had previously been raped. And a lot of men realize in the class that they actually are rapists.
Amazing. Imagine sitting there and thinking, wow, you know what? I'm a rapist.
Huh. That can't be actually happening.
Can't happen.
You know what I was thinking? Now that I heard her talk,
I'm a rapist.
Doesn't seem possible.
Weird. It is. It is. It's happening. And we're eviscerating the man. We're eviscerating common sense. We're eviscerating consensual relationships. I mean, we're taking our culture and ripping it apart. You want some common sense? We have it for you at the top of the hour. Let's use plain speak next.
This is the Glenn Beck program. Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We are so glad that you are here today. There's a big thing that is going around in our campuses, and it is called lies. The lies that are being told that are leading our children like sheep to the slaughter, they're quite amazing. One of the big lies is this rape culture that, you know, if you're a man, you most likely have raped. You just didn't know it. They're teaching our kids now this rape culture nonsense, and professors are reporting that in classes, as they describe what rape really is, the men in the class, the boys in the class realize, my gosh, I'm a rapist. And the girls realize, my gosh, I believe I've been raped. Shouldn't you know if you've been raped or if you're a rapist? Isn't rape, so don't we diminish the real rapes of the world? If you're like a few years later, wow, you know what? That could have been rape. Doesn't that diminish actual rape? We talk about this with an incredible woman, the factual feminist. We begin right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We're glad you're here. We have Christina Hoff Summers with us. She's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. She hosts a series on YouTube, fantastic, called The Factual Feminist. Each episode corrects a feminist myth. And tomorrow, she is going to be giving a lecture at St. Olaf College. She joins us now to talk about the state of feminism and this new push into the realm of, I think, insanity. Welcome to the program, Christina. How are you?
Hi, nice to be here.
Thank you very much. So where do we even begin on this new rape culture and what we're teaching and what millennials are now believing about this rape culture?
Well, it's all a fiction. It's a fantasy. It was created by radical feminist scholars with an agenda, eager to indict the average man in a social atrocity. They have exaggerated statistics, and they change definitions beyond, you know, the meaning of words. Most of us do think of rape as a horrible crime. They now have definitions that include seduction. So if you're willing to do that, you will get a rape epidemic. There is a lot of seduction.
So you know, I've said for 20 years with the Al Sharptons of the world, and then in the last 8 years, you know, the cry that everything is racist, to say the word Chicago was called racist, to do that takes all of the cries of actual racism and
exactly.
Makes them meaningless.
It trivializes it. This is what's happened with rape. And the students are not asking that the cases be turned over to the police, which would be reasonable because they have the ability to investigate. They turn it over to a campus tribunal that then determines guilt and innocence through what look to be kangaroo courts. And we have over 100 young men suing. And if you read through these cases, it's absolutely terrifying if you're the mother of sons, because a boy can be accused, and he's perceived to be guilty because he's accused. Because along with this idea of a rape culture is the idea that women don't lie. You have to believe women. Well, women lie, not because they're women, because they're human. Human beings lie, especially about sex.
Christina, may I take you to probably a different place than you expected? I am really concerned that we are imploding as a species because we are... hear me out for a second. I know that's a crazy thing to say.
No, I worry about that too.
Right? We're imploding as a species. We are taking technology... And we're going to give you the ultimate pleasure by creating your own little sexual world. You can live in it any way you want. You don't have to interact with anyone. And the more we go down that road, while at the same time making common sense completely driven into the wilderness, you won't want to have a relationship with somebody because you'll be accused as rape.
You'll be brought before a tribunal,
right?
And told that without any possibility of defending yourself, you can't. You're just presumed guilty, and you are shamed. They've created a shame culture on campus based on these strange definitions, and it is very disturbing. I worry because our colleges are now just so carried away with this so-called social justice agenda, but it's an agenda of authoritarianism. So this is where we are.
Christina Hoff Sommers is with us, and legitimately one of the bravest people you're going to find talking about this. Any issue, honestly, political discourse.
You just must be a pariah. Why do you hate women so much?
You know, I have been a feminist in the reasonable sense of the word for more years than I care to mention. I was a philosophy professor. I encouraged the young women in my class. I watched as women surpassed men in education, and only to turn around and find that the feminist establishment is not celebrating, the empowerment of women. They act as though things are worse than ever and getting worse every day. And I find this baffling, and it's very destructive. It's very harmful to the young women who are told that they are victims and taught to be paranoid. And I will also mention that many college classes, no one's done a good study of this. They should. The purpose of the class is to tear down Western civilization. Mm-hmm. It's not something to be proud of. Don't be proud of American history. It's a rape culture. It's defined by its worst injustices. Don't be proud. So they're replacing pride with shame. I don't know that this is a way to progress. I don't think people react well to being shamed. They recoil, or they, you know, in this case, they're at the campus. They're acting out these lots of mob justice. So it's very unhealthy.
Christina, let's take on one of the big ones here. People hear this all the time, that depending on who you hear it from, 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 women in college will be raped when they're there. Can you walk us through that statistic and what it actually is talking about?
Yes, that sort of statistic comes from, not from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, not from the FBI, legitimate data gathering organizations, they use careful methodology, and they will come up with a figure like 1 in 50. That's still too many, but it's far different from 1 in 4. 1 in 4 is worse than war-torn Congo. They're telling us that, you know, your daughter enters Wesleyan or Bard or Stanford, and she's basically entering a society more dangerous than any place on earth for a woman. How do they get that? Well, the first thing to know, they don't ask on these surveys, were you raped? If you ask that, you get a fairly low number. They describe events, and then they say, did this ever happen? And some of them do sound like, every woman would agree that someone said, yes, I was, violently assaulted and penetrated. You would agree that was rape. But they will include things like, have you had sex that you regretted because you were drunk? And if you say yes to that, that counts as a rape. So they change the definition from, an assault to a bad hookup, essentially. So that's one thing they do. They have They enlarge the definition. They ask a non-representative sample. A lot of these studies are computer-generated, and they will they'll send it out and see who responds. They'll send it out to, you know, 200,000 people, and maybe 1,000 respond. But that's a self-selected group of mm-hmm. respondents, and it may be people that feel more strongly about it. So you have to be very careful. So they do that. They ask a non-representative sample, then they project it onto all college students. So bad definition and a bad sample, and you can have an epidemic of anything that way.
How do we
claim to have it?
How do you look at things like what's happening at Fox News, where I believe we don't know the facts yet, but I believe there were bad things that happened at Fox. I worked there. I never saw anything, but I believe some of these things happen. Some of these things most likely also did not happen. And that's for the courts to work out. But they just fired Bill Shine yesterday, who was the vice president and really one of the stabilizing factors of Fox News. There's no charges that I am aware of that he was assaulting anybody or coming on to anybody. When you have this witch hunt, nobody wants to stand up and say, "Now wait a minute," because it's right. it just becomes, I want to protect women and we should believe the women and men are bad, and all of a sudden anyone can be swept up into this. How do we stop that?
Well, it's a moral panic. And those, you know, it create a lot of hysteria. And going back to what you said, there was a problem with some people at Fox News.
Yes.
And here's what distresses me the most as a equity feminist and equality feminist, is that if we want to help women, we should tell the truth, which it shouldn't be done in an atmosphere of panic and hysteria. Women who are victims need sober analysis. They need truth, not hype, not spin, not panic. We have too much of the latter. So if you want to help people who are at risk for sexual harassment, for sexual assault, these are real crimes. But if we want to help them, then we should tell the truth and not cry wolf and not get hysterical. And that helps no one.
But how do you do that when, I found as a father of three women, I found it beyond offensive what President Trump said about women when he was on the bus with Billy Bush. Just like shocking. I thought that was the end for sure. The left, of course, came out against that. The right suddenly was quiet. But when this happened in the 1990s, they were musical chairs. They were on the opposite side when it was Bill Clinton.
With Mr. Clinton.
Yeah. How does the average person affect something when these big, powerful groups don't really care? They're just using it.
Exactly. They're using it. And in this case, it's a little harder to fight because it's the source are these scholars. In the gender studies department, people have to realize their work is not carefully reviewed. They don't even, many of them don't even believe in the basic protocols of scientific research. They have their own methods they've invented of just listening to stories and believing people. And so, but journalists and even legislators, they take them seriously. They take these scholars seriously. And I'm just saying, I've been watching this for 20 years. At the heart of the women's movement today is a body of recklessly false information, and it's not helping women.
Is there a movement, a legitimate movement, that is out there?
You know, right now there are small groups. There are groups like the Independent Women's Forum. There's a group called the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. It's a civil libertarian group, not exclusively about women, but it addresses these issues. Both of those groups are very good, FIRE and IWF, but they're small. It's nothing compared to this juggernaut of, you know, women's organizations, and they're all marching in sisterly solidarity, and they reinforce one another's messages. It's in the colleges. I've never seen anything like this. it's you know, usually people can only go so far with their alternative facts and their concocted studies and pseudoscience. This has gone very far because I think a lot of men hesitated to correct the bad scholarship. They would be called sexist. A lot of women didn't want to belittle the cause they believed in at heart. They just thought they'd be quiet. And so, well, now we're coping with it. Now we've got this rape panic. And it's very destructive on campus. It's leading to fanaticism.
Christina Hoff Summers, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. She hosts a series on YouTube called The Factual Feminist, that where she corrects each episode of Feminist Myth, and it's fantastic. Great. It's really good. Tomorrow night she's going to be giving a lecture at St. Olaf College. It is great to have you on, Christina. Thank you so much.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
She's really quite amazing, Christina Hoff Summers.
Yeah.
And very much alone. Here's a real scholar who says feminists are off the rails.
And you made a great point there about talking about how these groups, they don't even believe it. They just switch sides whenever their person is accused of it.
Yeah.
And it's so true that they don't believe the stat. For example, 1 in 5 women are raped in college. Reverse engineer that for a moment. What it means is parents are sending their daughters and paying tens of thousands of dollars a year to a place that they think there's a 25% chance they will be raped. No parent would ever do that. On the other side of it, if you are hiring people who come out of college, why on earth would you hire a man? There is a 25% chance, roughly, that they raped someone, that you're hiring a rapist. Why on earth would any man ever get a job? It's so blatantly obvious they don't believe that stat, yet they continually throw it out there, and it's just agenda-driven.
I'm sorry, Stu, but your privilege is showing.
What? Wait, what?
Wait, really?
It's showing?
Yeah, it's showing.
Should I button something up?
Crap, I was just raped.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just raped.
This is again to your point, though. Mm-hmm. This is not helpful. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on there and you make all these, if you make everyone, every male on earth into a hidden rapist, it's not going to help people who actually have this issue
and
have been victimized.
What we're doing to boys.
Yeah.
You know, this whole culture has been, like, it's always about a pendulum. Always. The pendulum was so far over to a man's world that it is now swinging so far the other direction. We need to be moderate in all things. You know, now it is a woman's world where men are worthless. Hey, Toots, how you doing? Except in reverse. Hey, Beefcake, how you doing? And men can't say anything, and they're becoming women. And they're being encouraged to become women. Stop it. Men and women are both important.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, we spoke a little bit about Fox News and the absence of Bill Shine. He was let go yesterday. Again, I don't know. I wasn't involved in any of this stuff. But Bill Shine is another guy that I just don't believe was a bad guy. Just not a bad guy.
By the way, no one's making any accusations per se. He's been named in some of the things peripherally.
Because
but not,
he was around it.
Yeah, he was around it, or he didn't do enough to stop it. But no one's accusing him, as far as I know, of actually doing
anything. May I ask you an honest question?
No.
Okay, let me ask you one full of lies.
Okay, good.
All right. Let's say you are... Let's just put this in the, you know, our world... In the situation of Fox News, and we're the only ones in conservative media, we're the only ones that are beating the left at all. There's nobody else. Put yourself back in 2004, 2006, okay? Nobody's even close.
There's no internet yet. There's nothing. And you know that I, let's say I'm Roger Ailes, I am the guy who has put it all together. And without me, it ain't happening. You're Bill Shein. Now, you know that, or you suspect that I'm not the best guy, but you don't know all of the details, per se, and you know that I'm not the best guy. But you have a sneaking suspicion. Somebody comes in and makes a claim against me. You say, okay, well, let's sit down with the corporate attorneys. Let's go through this. And there's a big payoff. And you might say to me, hey, Glenn, did you do that? No, of course I didn't do that. That was crazy. You want to believe that I didn't do that because of it. You put your judgment into question. So there's this cognizant dissonance inside of you.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to believe. How did I miss something that was this terrible if it was actually going on?
Now, it happens several times, and the payoffs keep getting bigger and bigger. You have to ask yourself at that point, okay, obviously, maybe something's going on, but Glenn keeps denying. But Glenn's got some tendencies that just make me a little uncomfortable. I could see that maybe this is happening. But eventually, the company is going to get pissed, and hopefully this time, Glenn's learned his lesson. Do you stay there? Do you try to make the best and try to keep things going because you believe in what you're doing? You just don't believe in what he's doing, but you know that if he's pulled out, it's Jenga and the whole thing comes down?
I mean, I think, yeah, I think I do. You don't?
I do.
I think,
I mean,
yeah.
I think you get into that situation, and right or wrong, I think you're justifying, and you're hoping that it's going to get better. You're hoping that he's going to learn his lesson. You're hoping all kinds of things because, I mean, I know when I worked at Fox, that was it, guys. That was it. Without Fox, you got MSNBC, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS. You got nothing. You got nothing. And if Fox goes away now, and I'm saying this as a guy who runs The Blaze and on talk radio, we are set back two decades of influence.
I will say, too, I mean, one of the reasons why you started The Blaze and wanted to do it was because you didn't want Fox to be the only group out there doing anything conservative, their only voice. Because if something happens to Fox, like, I don't know what's happening to Fox, then you are left with zero.
If the cable companies... quite honestly, if I had the money to just pay them, which is the wrong business model, it's not sustainable if you do it that way, but some people are doing it that way. If you just pay them to go on cable, you can get on cable. You got to, you know, if we can get onto cable, if we could have gotten onto cable, there wouldn't have been a problem because you would have had a secondary choice. I happen to believe that that A, still can happen, with a right hire or two. I also believe that it is imperative that you subscribe. Let me say it this way. You believe in the Conservative Review? Subscribe to the Conservative Review. You believe in The Blaze? Subscribe to The Blaze. Please. You are about to lose the real influence. You have a chance of losing the real influence. You've already decimated Fox so much that soon the left is going to say, okay, who's next? And they're going to start looking. So who's it going to be? And they're going to pick us off one at a time. We need your support now more than ever. And I will tell you this, the best thing we ever did, and a lot of these places have not learned the lesson because they haven't gone through it the hard way. And they also had big money behind them. Well, that's good to have big money behind them. But eventually your model doesn't work. And I know it because I didn't have big money behind me. And so we had to do it. And we learned some models don't work. And we learned what models do work. And it's the harder way, but it is the way that will actually last. But we need your support. And the thing that felt really good, I've been having some conversations with people, and the one thing that is good about the Blaze is this thing was built to support an advertiser boycott. We don't rely on United Airlines. We don't rely on Kraft Foods. We don't rely on any of those. If they ever come, great. They don't come, oh well. And it's your subscription that allows us to weather those storms. And I'm telling you, those storms are going to come. Those storms are going to come. And if you ever thought that people like Rush Limbaugh were going to have had problems in the past, now that Fox News is out of the way, we're all in trouble. We're all in trouble. If they start going after Sean Hannity, that will tie directly into talk radio, and talk radio will start to get hammered again. We need your support. Please subscribe to The Blaze today. Go to theblaze.com and subscribe today. We need your support.
And I think you're seeing in the Fox thing, because a lot of people will say, well, you know, a couple hosts go, a couple executives go, who cares? Well, first of all, you should care. But second of all, look at the way it's sort
spread.
Of, it's moving, right? It starts off with Roger Ailes, who a lot of people, there's a lot of credible allegations against, I don't know, they paid him a ton of money to leave, right? Who knows, you know. But I mean, a lot of people in the media, let's say, believed those rumors, right? Then it goes on to Bill O'Reilly, who less people seem to believe. Some do, some don't. However, you know Fox doesn't care. Like, Fox doesn't care if Bill O'Reilly did anything or not. They just don't want to deal with the press pushback. There are people inside of Fox who didn't want him there. They see this as an issue they can't win in the press, and so they're trying to get that over with.
And the two boys do not want the old Fox News.
Well, that's where I was going, because I think this next
boys.
Step,
yeah.
Rupert Murdoch's children, the next step here is Bill Shine, who isn't even being really accused of anything. Like, not only do not people, it's not that they don't believe it or not, he's not really being accused of anything. He's being accused of maybe not doing enough to stop other people's accusations, right? And now he's out. And what I think you're seeing a turn here from the belief that these accusations are troubling and the culture's bad, changing that over to, we want this television station to change. We want this network to change to something else. Now we have an opportunity to change the direction, the editorial message, the movement that it's been involved with. We can change all of that right now. Here's our opportunity. And people wrestling for a power inside of that organization, just like we're seeing at Heritage, are trying to, they're seeing an opportunity and they're trying to change it all right now. And depends on what it changes to and everything else. But we kind of have an idea as to what many of those players want it to be. And it's not a conservative network.
No. And I will tell you this. With net neutrality and that nightmare, with talk radio.
By the way, we're talking to
Ajit Pai.
He's the FCC chairman.
Yeah, coming up in a few minutes.
He's an amazing guy. He stood pretty alone. When we were on Fox, we were big supporters of Ajit Pai. And he stood alone in a very hostile world at the FCC during the Obama administration. He's now the chairman, and he's going to be on with us here in a second to talk a little bit about the future of net neutrality, the future of all of this stuff. They're powerful people. I told you before, Ted Koppel talked to me in an interview that I did with CBS, and they edited it out. He said, Glenn, we need to license journalists. We can't just have anybody going online. We have to have a license.
Interesting,
oh my.
They took that out.
Yeah, it is. It is. But that's where we're headed. We are headed for a world that your voice and the voices that support your point of view are going to be squashed. And I will tell you, it is going to come from the right and the left. the and it might start like it did at Fox with some legitimate stuff. We just talked about the feminist movement. There is legitimate reasons for the feminist movement. Yeah. And then look what happened. You are on the verge of a witch hunt, and it's going to come from the left and the right. The Donald Trumps of the world, the alt-right of the world that are way past Donald Trump. You've already seen Donald Trump saying, you know, I want you to be able to sue broadcast people for if they say things that, you know, basically he feels aren't true. If you wrap people up in litigation and you shut them up so they don't feel they can't feel free to say things about public figures, you're not in America anymore. The alt-right is fascist. They want control of the media just as much. It's why we must come together. Stop throwing bombs at one another. And movements like this, what's happening with Fox, is only going to hurt the left because it's going to make the right feel even more caged, more bullied, more silenced. And what's going to happen? They'll become more extreme. I'm begging you. I'm begging you. Don't go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. And be aware of the times that we're living in. Please subscribe to The Blaze today. Go to theblaze.com and subscribe right now. I think it's theblaze.com/TV, or how do you? It's been so long since I've asked you to do this, but I think it's theblaze.com/TV. Is that right?
Yeah,
Jeffy?
That'll do it. Start and your free trial right at the top.
Yep, and subscribe today.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Two things I want you to know about. Just found out that Jeannie Gaffigan, Jim Gaffigan's wife, they just found a major brain tumor around the stem of her brain. She had 9 hours of surgery. She's out. She's back home resting. Don't have any more details than that. Hope everything is good. Pray for the Gaffigans. She's a wonderful person. He's great too. But pray for them. Boy, that's a hard one with a huge family.
Oh my God.
The other thing is, we were just talking about Hannity off air about, how do you think the Murdoch kids feel about, they've gotten rid of all the lineup except for Sean. They've gotten rid of all the people except for Sean. And he tweeted, if Bill Shine goes, that's trouble for Fox News. Fox News is over. Sean and I have our differences in the last year, but I do not want any voice silenced. I support his voice and I stand with Sean. And I think he's going to be the next target, and I stand and support Sean Hannity. No matter what has happened between us, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If we can't disagree with each other, and when somebody's voice is, if people are trying to silence somebody's voice, if we can't stand up and support that voice, we got nothing anyway. We got nothing to fight for anyway. Sean, I stand with you. Let us know how we can help. Back in a minute with the chairman of the FCC.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
I have to tell you, I don't think I know of a government regulator that I like, except perhaps one. And he joins us now, a very powerful regulator, a man who is going to be, I believe, in the right at the pinnacle of everything that is going on right now and overseeing the real transfer of, or possible transfer of power, if the free market is allowed to remain. Ajit Pai, the FCC commissioner, joins us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The head of the FCC, the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, now joins us. Ajit, I don't know if you are aware of this at all, but we've been watching you for a while. I have no idea how you got by Obama, but we're glad you did.
Well, thanks so much, Glenn. I really appreciate the kind words and grateful to you for making time for me today.
Oh, you bet. We have a lot of questions for you, and I want to talk to you about net neutrality. I want to talk to you about the cable industry and this cry of fake news and where you think we're going. Let's start with probably net neutrality. Net neutrality is in some ways a nightmare and will limit people. In other ways, people will look at this and say, wait, I don't want my cable operator being able to pick and choose winners and slow down, you know, the speeds of YouTube if they're trying to promote their own YouTube. Can you make the argument?
Absolutely. I think the key point here is that nothing about the internet was broken from the dawn of the internet age in the 1990s until 2015. The internet economy in the United States was the envy of the world precisely because President Clinton and a Republican Congress agreed that instead of regulating the heck out of this new technology, we would let it develop and take targeted action as necessary. And that's, I think, part of the reason why we saw the tremendous explosion in activity online. But in 2015, on a party line vote, the FCC imposed these heavy-handed rules that were developed for Ma Bell, the telephone monopoly back in the 1930s. And as a result, we've seen less investment in networks. We're seeing less competition than ever. And I think that's one of the things we want to address going forward is, you know, light touch regulation, I think, is the best calibrated to make sure that consumers have more competitive choice and that companies have a greater incentive to invest.
So
and
how,
that's where we're heading in the future.
How would you address, I said this to Ray Kurzweil, who, you know, is a part of the Singularity University, works for Google. And I said, so, Ray, why wouldn't Google develop an algorithm that would find people who are using the search engine to create a bigger and better Google? Why wouldn't they just, I mean, that's human nature to protect yourself. If somebody is coming in, you can piece together in advance, wait a minute, these people are looking to build a better Google. Why wouldn't you just shut them down? He said, well, that would never happen because we're all good people. And, you know, I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory. But, you know, we are now in the internet age, playing devil's advocate, of these gigantic corporations that you're just not going to, the little guy is not going to compete against Google. They're not going to compete against Apple. They're not, you can't compete around Comcast.
And the point I've consistently made is that we don't put our faith in people or in companies. What's that saying? If men were angels, no laws would be necessary.
Right.
Well, we have a system of laws, antitrust and competition laws on one hand, and consumer protection laws on the other. And those are administered by, say, the Federal Trade Commission, our Justice Department here in Washington, by state agencies across the country. And so there's a whole framework of laws to protect against that kind of conduct. What we don't need is the FCC preemptively micromanaging every single business in the United States, not just the big ones that you mentioned, but even the smaller companies that have told us we're holding back on investment now because of these heavy-handed regulations.
So we're talking to Ajit Pai. He's the chairman of the FCC. You know, as I look at the most hated services in America, or service providers, it's your electric company, it's your insurance companies, it's your cable companies. Those are all the ones that are the most heavily regulated. However, as somebody who has tried without $200 million behind me to break in and have a groundswell, a verified groundswell of support behind me, these to break into cable is absolutely impossible if you are a voice that the companies want to block. You just can't do it. How do we balance that and make sure that, you know, the app system, because that's why we, you know, that's why we're on online. Okay, well, good, we'll do it online. But how do we make sure that the app system isn't blocked now by a Comcast or an Apple, where you're just not going to get in and break through?
That's a terrific question. Two different answers. Number one, the way you do it is by promoting more competition. You make sure that the barriers to entry, so to speak, are low, that people like you can express yourselves over a variety of different platforms. And number two, to the extent that that's a concern, remember that the people who are promoting this Title II regulation through the U.S. government are not the friends of free speech and free expression. These groups are consistently saying that they want government control of the Internet, not just for its own sake, but in order to regulate how speech and expression happens online. Right. And they've been very open about this over the years.
But you can't, as a person, I can't start my own cable company. It's all regulated. I can't start one.
And that's why we've had a very aggressive agenda in the 3 months that I've been on in the chairman's office to make sure that we enable more companies to make that decision to enter the marketplace, removing some of the barriers that they've found in terms of the rules, and making it easier for them to raise capital and to enter these marketplaces. And we want those smaller companies that are getting squeezed by these regulations to finally enter the market and provide a competitive option.
So help me out on this. Ted Koppel, who I have a lot of respect for, has done a lot of great journalism over his lifetime. I was talking to him, and he was concerned about all this fake news. And I said, Ted, go back to the Revolutionary War. There was tons of fake news back then. We're just in a new situation, and we haven't found our way to balance it yet. But you got to trust the people. And he immediately said, I think that we need to start, having a license for people to be on the internet and to present news. We have to verify those people who are online. That's insane.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, I have a lot of respect for Ted Koppel's career, but frankly, his comments are repugnant to the spirit and the letter of the First Amendment. In fact, that's the very reason why John Milton in 1644 wrote his great treatise on free expression, Areopagitica, where he said that, you know, the king has no business licensing people to allow them to speak. The entire premise of Western civilization is that you don't have a gatekeeper allowing you to speak only at the whim of the king. And that's the same here in the United States. The last thing I think we want is government, regulators like me, deciding who speaks and who doesn't. That's the fantastic thing about the internet age, I think.
So, don't you think, though, Glenn, that and Ajit Pai, we're talking to him, FCC chairman, you have this situation where it's not about what happened in 1644 or anything. It's about what's coming up on May 30th, which is season 5 of House of Cards. People want their Netflix.
Thank you.
They want it streamed. They don't want their evil cable company slowing it down. Is that something that needs to be regulated, or does the market actually work that stuff out?
To me, the market works it out, and the best evidence of that is the digital economy that we had prior to 2015 when we imposed these rules. Companies were not engaging in the blocking of lawful content. And to the extent that we have concerns about competition, the best way to get there is not by imposing these heavy-handed regulations that slow down infrastructure investment, especially by some of the smaller companies that would give you a competitive option. It's by making sure we have clear-cut rules of the road that are market-friendly that incentivize more companies to enter this space. And so, look, I'm all in favor of the government taking a look at any competitive problems as they pop up, but preemptively regulating everybody from the Fortune 500 companies down to the tiny companies in Little Rock, Arkansas, is not the way to get there.
I will tell you, Ajit, I look at this time period, and I'd love to hear your point of view on this. I look at this time period of American history as a combination of the Industrial Revolution and heavy emphasis on Tesla and Edison, all in about a 20-year period. I mean, what's coming in technology and communication has already been profound, but it's going to become even more profound. And, you know, as a student of history, and you obviously are one as well, when you look back at those days of Tesla and Edison, in many ways, Tesla was right. Edison was just good at playing the game with the government. And he was a, excuse my language, but a son of a bitch. And that's not French, that's English.
Can we say that on the air, Mr. FCC chairman?
Oh, I guess I shouldn't have said that with the FCC chairman. Wow, I didn't
I'll
say
give you a pass, don't worry.
Okay, thank you.
Didn't think that one through, did you?
Yeah, I didn't think that one through. I forgot who we were talking to. Anyway, we never say things like that, by the way. Golly gee, darn it, I'm sorry. We were pushed back because of the collusion with very powerful people like Edison and very powerful politicians. Do you see us? How do you see what's coming our way?
Well, that's a great question. I think the first thing is the empowerment of the citizen that the internet allows. It used to be that to do virtually anything, you had to work through some sort of gatekeeper. If you're buying a car, you have to go through a dealer. If you're wanting to stay in a place, you have to go book a room with a hotel. And now, because of technology, you can do anything basically by yourself. And that's an incredible amount of empowerment. But on the other hand, we always have to guard against this instinct of essentially crony capitalism. And the phenomena that you talked about. And to that extent, I think what people need to understand is that heavy-handed regulation is actually the friend of bigger businesses and for those who believe in big government, because the big companies are always going to have the armies of lawyers and accountants to comply with these regulations, to persuade government to dole out a few favors on this or that issue. It's the smaller companies that are disproportionately affected. And the second thing is that it's very seductive for a lot of people to think, well, you know, the market just leaves consumers at the mercy of these wild and unpredictable forces, when in reality, the market has delivered more value for consumers than preemptive government regulation ever could. I mean, the fact that we have billions of people who are emerging from poverty now is a result of free market policies. It's not because the governments over these various countries have suddenly decided to bestow largesse upon them. And so it's a case that we consistently have to make. That, you know, crony capitalism and big government regulation, those are not the friends of average consumer.
So we have a situation now of fake news, and it's been around forever, but it is at epidemic proportions because the average person has access to everybody, and the average person, you know, unfortunately, doesn't think things through and really read everything. They see a headline, they click on it, and they share it. We have some really nefarious people, some of them over in Russia, that are using our own technology against us, using our own freedoms against us. We have the press. I told you about Ted Koppel. But we also have the president coming out and saying, you know, you're fake news and we should be able to sue you more. Does the FCC have a role in the First Amendment and saying to all sides, knock it off? The freedom of the press is the freedom of the press, no matter if it's a printing press or the internet. Knock it off.
Well, I've consistently said, and this goes back to my time as a commissioner up to 5 years ago, that one of the distinctive features of America is the fact that we have a First Amendment. It's unique in human history for the government to establish in its very founding papers the notion that anybody in this country has the ability to speak, anybody has the ability to write, anybody has the ability to worship as he or she sees fit. And that's something that requires not just the cold parchment of the Constitution, but it requires a culture that admires that those freedoms. And so I've consistently spoken about the need to preserve that culture of free speech and free press, because it's a slippery slope. Once you lose it, it's very hard to reclaim
well,
it.
You have a 50 or 60% of so-called conservatives saying that there's a limit to freedom of the press. Is there?
Well, the Constitution speaks for itself, and so long as I have the privilege of occupying this office, I'll keep defending that core constitutional freedom. It's one of the things that I think makes America a very unique place across time and across the world.
So I think with that answer, I just have to end where we started. How the hell did you get past Barack Obama?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how I slipped through the cracks.
I don't know either.
Maybe it's sort of like the Forrest Gump of Washington scene. I just kept ambling on, and here I am.
Okay. Ajit Pai, thank you so much for talking to us, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And thanks for the shout-out to Ario Pajutica. That's I think that's a first time.
Oh, how many times are we talking about Ario
Off the air. We talk about it all the time.
Okay,
you know what I
Milton's
love?
Milton's Ario Pajutica.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Sure you could. Steve Deese is coming up in just a second.
Deese.
I always say Deese. It's Deese. Steve Deese coming up. Ajit Pai. Wow.
He's great. And this is one of the things I haven't loved everything Trump's done, but that's one of the best things he's done. In the first 100 days, that's a huge win for conservatives, for the free market. I mean, there is no better case for the free market in existence than the internet. And that is why the left targets it so much.
You have chocolate all over your face.
Do I?
Yes.
Or you eat cherry
bread. And if you're watching it on the internet, then you would know that. But Ajit Pai is the FCC chairperson and is remarkable. We have been a fan of his for a long time. I think we even tried to do a write-in campaign or something to help bolster him when he was the lone wolf crying out in the wilderness with Obama.
He was the only one who was opposing net neutrality and so many of the regulations that went on in that era. And
what was his name? Remember the diversity czar at the FCC? Lloyd Grove? Yes. Lloyd?
No.
Something or other. You know what you remember who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Anyway, he was there during all of that. So, but there were several news stories in that interview.
Yeah, I think so. Some reporters will look at that.
And I think if support, reporters would look at that interview and go, huh.
Maybe I just come up with one.
He said a few things.
Off the top of my head, maybe the fact that a radio host said son of a bitch to the FCC commissioner or chairman. Maybe that was one of the stories.
I'm sure he's heard that before, not necessarily on a national radio program, but
didn't
even cross my mind.
No,
that's amazing.
What a change, right?
What a change. Mm. In 1980, I said crap on the air at WPGC in Washington, D.C., and I got a full-page memo on this is the home of the FCC. I don't know who the hell you think you are, but we don't use language like that on the air. We prefer to keep our license. Son of a bitch. Back in just a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Steve Deese is a good friend of the program, really smart, and a conservative that you need to know if you don't already. He writes for conservativereview.com, and I will tell you, I almost ejected him from my friend circle when he recommended The Circle. In one of his articles,
the movie The Circle,
one of the worst movies of all time. He starts with this
with this understatement, it's like
understatement
saying,
of the century,
it's like
perhaps.
Saying Hitler sometimes could be testy. He wrote, make no mistake, The Circle is not a great movie by any means. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And Hitler was testy. However, it's a movie I would highly recommend that every American see. No, stop. So I thought I'd get Steve on the phone and explain yourself to this kangaroo tribunal here, Steve.
Well, first of all, I want to throw myself on the mercy of the court with that setup. but the film does. I mean, I found myself. I laughed out loud with my wife at the movie several times.
Oh yeah, me too.
And about 2/3 of the way through it, I leaned over to Amy and I said, "Honey, this might be the most conservative movie that wasn't made by, you know, studios that are favorable to our belief system I've ever seen." Because I don't know, the movie may be so bad that it is unintentional.
I think so too.
I don't think they had any idea.
By accident.
And that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at, and I point out several places where the movie gives you the full Monty, if you will, of progressivism, and shows, if we're mixing metaphors here, how it literally just chokes the life out of a civilization. And it shows that abundantly. I mean, listen, the moment where the heroine says, don't tell me you didn't laugh, Glenn, when Emma Watson's character says, and here's a piece of protest art, click frowns on our social media and send a stern message to the oppressive regime that's being protested, which I'm sure they'll understand.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty much the most millennium snowflake thing of all time.
Yeah.
And they meant, but
I don't think they wrote that in a way. They meant that.
I think so.
They meant that.
I know. That's what makes it even better, right? Yeah. I mean, when they show you honestly, here's what we really believe, where we really want to take you. The movie really plays up in its trailer the line when Tom Hanks says, quote, I believe in the perfectibility of man.
Yes.
And it really plays that up and then shows his own fallibility on parade. And so I think that the fact that they didn't intend it makes it an even more powerful apologetic because they think this is an infomercial.
So, Steve, I really think that they were going to make a happy movie called The Circle. And then they realized they don't really have anything there, maybe after they started production. And then they thought, okay, we'll make it kind of creepy and we'll show how, you know, how it can be really creepy. But they didn't want to go all the way and say that this was bad. And so this movie went nowhere. It didn't have any idea if it was supposed to be for the circle or against the circle.
I don't disagree with that at all. And if you want to see a movie that was made earlier this year that is much better made, it's in a different stratosphere in terms of filmmaking, that also turns progressivism on itself, I would recommend Get Out, which does exactly that.
I haven't seen that.
Get Out just
that's the
blue state progressive as we're impervious to racism and it turns the reflection on themselves and it's brutal to watch. That's a better deconstruction in terms of filmmaking. But I think if they had actually embraced the story they told and did that in the filmmaking process and marketed it accordingly, they might have had something. Because let's face it, a lot of Americans, a majority of Americans, have turned their backs on utopian schemes of progressivism. They have seen it fully immersed in the last 8 years under Obama and realized that this can't deliver. That existentially, this can't do what it promises it's going to do. The problem with a mainstream studio with a star like Tom Hanks making a film like that is it really goes against their stated value system. And so you can sense the conflict.
I've never felt conflict like that. You could feel the conflict from the writing, directing, the acting, everything. They were so conflicted they didn't know what to do with this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at one of the supporting characters, Mercer. All right. So on one hand, he throws in one of the only real leftist true propaganda moments in the movie when he says, you know, we need antitrust legislation to break up all these big banks and big companies. But then this is the white guy who drives a pickup truck who wants to live off the grid, making deer antler ornaments and is literally pestered by progressives literally to death in the film.
Yeah.
That is the exact conflict that exists throughout the course of this movie. Yeah. And it's because ultimately when we enact progressivism, gentlemen, when we take it beyond the theoretical and put it in a real world and we do things that say, no, man is not fallible. No, the world, the creation is not fallen. And we attempt to impose a square peg in a round hole. we create those conflicts, and we're living in them in our society right now.
Steve, can I change subjects with you? You wrote to me this weekend. I'm having a heck of a time here in Texas finding a school for my kids. Yesterday, this school that had previously told us that it was fine started hearing, I think, from parents, et cetera, that Mormons might be attending. And so they've rejected us now. And they actually said yesterday to my wife, look, you know, kids can be cruel. And when they find out that your kids are Mormon, I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but they're going to make fun of them. Instead of saying, by the way, if we find out that any kids are making fun of your kids because they're different, this is a Christian school. And, you know, we can't guarantee that that won't happen, but it won't be tolerated. No. Instead, they were just telling us that they're going to be made fun of. And even in class, they could be made fun of. Oh, okay.
Maybe even some of the teachers. And
they said in class they're just going to feel they're going to feel out of place because they just won't they won't fit in with the
Sometimes Mormon kids get locked in closets and
there are beatings, there are hoses. These things happen.
Yeah. It's crazy.
What's the name of this school?
I don't think that does anything to
it sure does.
Sounds like
no. I don't want to go. We don't want to go. I mean, I asked my kids. You know, do you want to go to a school? And they were like, no, we do not want to go. We're not going.
No, it'd be a shame if other people decided that same thought.
Yeah.
And just knew the name.
So you're not saying that it's Liberty Christian?
No, I'm not saying that, but thank you for that.
All right. I'm glad you're not saying it's Liberty Christian.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Pat. Thank you.
Right, would we?
Thank you, Pat.
That's the
so, Steve. The if yeah, I may, you sent something to me this weekend, and you said, "What is the name of this place?"
Freedom Project Academy is what it's called.
Is that the thing you endorsed, Pat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're sending your kids through that, Steve?
Yeah, we're going to send our youngest, our son, through that. I hate to use the term middle child because I think there's a stigma with that, so I always call Zoe our youngest daughter. She has a couple of learning disabilities, so she requires a different level of and kind of education from her mom here at home. But we're going to send Noah through that this fall, and we're looking forward to it. And I first heard about these guys. Actually, they came to me when you guys were putting the Common Core movie together a few years ago.
Yeah.
Mm. And that issue was a hot burner issue. And the guy who is sort of the dean of the academy, Dr. Duke Pesta, was actually doing a lot of talks around the country, warning people about the perils of Common Core.
Yeah, I've looked into them, and I
heard about these guys.
Yeah, I've looked into them, and they are wildly anti-Common Core, which I love.
It's classic education.
Yeah,
which is important to me.
And it's a classroom situation, so they're at home and they're watching and participating in a classroom.
Yeah, you know, Noah is like pretty much every other boy. You know, we tend to think that if they're not willing to sit still for more than 20 minutes, they need to be drugged. That's kind of how we roll today.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he needs some structure. You know, he needs to be challenged. So mom and I were just decided, you know what, let's just do this program and get him a little bit more structure and challenge him a little bit more intellectually and put him in some inconvenient situations and get him to man up a little bit. So we thought it was the perfect fit for him. Hmm.
And the name of it again is, what is it? Freedom.
Freedom Project.
Freedom Project. Mm-hmm. Okay. Steve, thank you, brother. And I just want you to know, you were on the edge of the friend circle by recommending the circle. Now, I understand you can take lemons and make them into lemonade, but please, dear God, do not wish that movie on any human being. If they find themselves there, if you're strapped
you
to a
look
chair...
You can some of these things,
you're strapped to a chair and somebody says, hey, the circle has just come out and we can watch it online. As long as they're screaming, no, dear God, no, not the circle, but they put it on and you can't stop. But then I understand.
Always remember this when it comes to our progressive friends. Unintentional self-repudiation is always the best. Yeah. Always remember that.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it, man. Steve Dace from the Conservative Review, and it's always good to have him on.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, Mike,
goodness, it has been a fantastic show. Oh. Hey, we have to play the trailer for Netflix.
Yes.
Is for House of Cards. I'm a huge House of Cards fan. Huge. And if it isn't the greatest ad against progressivism, I don't know what is. House of Cards, Democrats, progressives that feel they're better than everybody else and wildly corrupt.
They know better.
They know better. That's the deal. Now listen, if this isn't an anti-progressive ad, listen to this new ad from Netflix for House of Cards.
I knew. I know exactly what they need. They're like little children, Claire. We have to hold their sticky fingers and wipe their filthy mouths. Teach them right from wrong. Tell them what to think and how to feel and what to want. They even need help writing their wildest dreams, crafting their worst fears. Lucky for them, they have me. They have you. Underwood. 2016. 2020. 2024. 2028. 2032. 2036.
If you are not watching House of Cards, you got to watch it. It is, I think, the best depiction of Washington. And everyone I talk to in Washington that works there, they all love it and say it's spooky because without the killing, it's exactly like Washington.
Well, they would say that.
Yeah. And I'm like, you sure there's not killing going on? But it and it is
Ask
progressive
Vince Foster about that.
Thank you.
Oh wait, you can't. He's been killed.
No, that's along not. With 297 others.
I mean, it is true though. I mean, look, that's the attitude. There are Democrats. We've talked about this before. It really seemed like they wrote this about the Clintons. But I mean, they're not conservatives by any means. No. That's not what they're trying to do.
You know what? We should try again. I really want to get the head writer on because I'd love to have a real conversation one-on-one with the head writer of House of Cards because everything I've read about him, he is on the left, but we have so much in common. If he is making statements of this is the way the government is, we agree 110%.
And the only difference between Frank Underwood, who you just heard, and the typical progressive is evil intent, right?
Yes.
Like in that, it seems like he's doing it. He hates the people. But I mean, in reality, like, it's the same attitude.
Wilson did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He hated the people.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the people.
Right.
Now, not all of them do. Right. I think Bill Clinton really liked the people. I don't know if Barack Obama liked all the people,
but at least they would.
I'm not sure that Donald Trump likes all the people.
Agree with him. He liked those people,
right? Yeah.
But they would at least politically, publicly argue. We need to help these people. They don't understand. They don't.
Right.
They don't get it.
We have to help them along.
Yeah. People don't know. I mean, it's the same thing of all the Cass Sunstein stuff that they implemented at the beginning of the Obama administration.
Correct.
It was like we need to make these decisions for people, not because we hate them or whatever. It's because they can't make them for themselves.
Smart.
Best for them.
Right.
They don't know what's best for them. We do.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.